Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia-Florida line. You know I got to open up giving you guys a shout-out because you listen to us faithfully, and we thank you for listening. We thank you for jamming with us on all of our stations here at Davis Broadcasting, and we thank you for contributing to the feedback, the social media feedback, giving us calls, telling us what you like. Continue to call in. Remember, if you have a topic that you want to hear on Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, you can give us a call up here at the station, and we will be more than happy to make sure we address that for you. And so if you are one of our regular listeners, then I know you know all the information. But if you are new and you want to call in, you can reach us here at 706-576-3565. Davis Broadcasting at 706-576-3565. Well, we got an exciting show today. I tell you, you know, I love when I get the opportunity to sit down and talk with other brilliant legal minds where we can really analyze the law and talk about issues and think about it through the lens of attorneys, in which we oftentimes look at things a little differently. And we are fortunate to have many attorneys here in the Columbus area that are very engaged with the community. They're very engaged with outreach. They're very engaged with helping other individuals. And they care about the community and genuinely want to see it move forward and want to be used as a resource, so that if the community needs an explanation on something, if you have questions about something, or, you know, something's puzzling the community from a legal perspective, you know, that those group of attorneys, in which I'm proud to be a part of, that's part of what we do. We just want to make sure that we are contributing back, because we truly understand that we all, again, and I said this many times before, and I'll say it again, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. We did not get to where we are by ourselves. We certainly had to have the people before us to blaze the way. If it wasn't for Thurgood Marshall, that was educated at Howard University, arguing so beautifully in Supreme Court and other courts for rights, we would find ourselves at a disadvantage. But today I have one of those amazing attorneys here with me. I see her everywhere. She's always doing things. She's always helping somebody. I can tell you there isn't a time that I've called her and asked her to assist someone that she's told me no. She's always saying yes, and I'm greatly appreciative of that. And I'm just excited to have with me today Miss Jennifer Dunlap. How you doing today, Jennifer?
Hello, I'm doing well. I want to thank you for the invitation to share information with your listeners.
Well, you know, Jennifer, you're welcome to come in here anytime you get ready. I mean, because, you know, we have that type of relationship and friendship. You know, it's just that, you know, whenever you're around, you're just so valuable with information and with guidance that, you know, who wouldn't want you in their presence? So thank you again for coming up here to have this conversation with us today. As we just have a conversation about what's going on in the legal world. But first, I got to talk about this first. This week in the news, there was a WRBL story that talked about some comments made by Judge Ben Land. Now, Ben Land is a new Superior Court judge here. He was recently appointed by Governor Deal. The Land family has a long history of serving in judgeships in this particular area of the state, on the federal bench as well as on the Superior Court bench.
Correct.
And, you know, it's very rare that we often get to see a judge really talk about things outside the courtroom, because, you know, they can't do this and they can't do that, and people hold them for so much and hold them to too much. But he brought something to light that a lot of people were not aware of, and that's the fact that we have over 400 people in the Muskogee County Jail that is beyond a 45-day period for indictment, which is pretty much a guideline that has been set for. But I just kind of want to hear your take on that. You know, in this one particular case in which he was addressing, there was this guy that has spent 1,377 days in jail without an indictment. Now, let me just explain something to the listeners here, set a little foundation here, because I know we're talking this legal language and we totally understand. When someone is arrested by the police officer and charges, or they're told what they're being charged with, that's kind of the preliminary point of it. It's not the final say-so. The final say-so comes from the DA's office. The DA is the person that solely determines what an individual is going to be charged with. And then from there, the DA can move forward those charges either by bringing an indictment or by presentment. You can do it both ways. However, the indictment is the strongest form that's rarely overturned because the probable cause evidence is heard by a jury of peers that's presented to by the DA. And if the jury returns a true bill, which means if they determine, yes, that they see probable cause and it should go into a full-blown trial, that's when we move forward and that's when you have an indictment. So what the judge is saying is that we have people that have been in jail over a period of time. Over 400 of them has been in jail at least 45 days, but this one guy had been in jail for over 1,300 days and had not been indicted. And that's a very sticky point because at that point, a person has not been proven guilty, but yet we're holding them in jail and it teeters on the line. And some will argue it is a violation of constitutional rights. What you think about that, Jennifer?
Well, I see what you mean, and you're right about the process. So when an officer arrests, that means that officer has found probable cause right there at the arrest level. That decision gets reviewed, of course, by the recorder's court judge or the judge over in magistrate court for if it's a sheriff's arrest. But you're right that the district attorney's office is tasked with bringing the formal charges, meaning that they have reviewed the law, they have reviewed the facts in the case, and now they have decided that these are the actual charges this person should be tried on. And so this, when you talk about the constitutionality of it, you're really talking about someone who's been in jail without formal charges. Mm-hmm. They're in jail on preliminary charges. That's where no scary. One has reviewed the facts, put that together and said, okay, this is what this person should be charged with. And so I know in the article, and some of the facts are that, you know, the individual had to go out for what looks to me like a restoration period of time. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was found incompetent by a medical professional and had to go out for a rehabilitation sort of like period of time to see whether or not he could understand what he would be charged with. Mm-hmm. But none of that has to do with indictment.
Right.
Indictment can proceed. Right. A case can be presented to grand jury regardless of whatever the situation is with the defendant. Mm-hmm. So certainly that's not an excuse.
You know, Jennifer, I don't want to overplay this or over exaggerate it or cause any false alarm. But for me personally and for me professionally, you know, as an attorney, this scares me. And it scares me for so many reasons. For one in particular, because an individual can sit in jail without an indictment, which means your legal process is not moving forward and no one is really checking on you or making sure you're okay or following up with you while you're in jail. And you're kind of just sitting there being forgotten about.
Yeah. And let me say this, too, because this is why I think it's dangerous. You know, indictment is what leads to an arraignment. So mm-hmm. usually once a person is indicted or formal charges are brought by a accusation, which is a charging instrument the district attorney's office generates without an indictment, and they're allowed to do that in certain types of crimes, then you have an arraignment. Mm-hmm. Arraignment is when you are formally given notice of what your charges are, mm-hmm. as well as it triggers the district attorney's, then they have the obligation at that point to turn over the evidence to mm-hmm. say, this is now why we're holding you. Mm-hmm. Before that period of time, a lot of times people have no idea why they're in jail because they have not been presented with a shred of evidence.
And there is nothing that their attorney can defend.
Their attorney cannot defend anything because they at that point don't have evidence. They don't have a police report. You're not allowed to get that until you are indicted and you have gone through to arraignment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So at arraignment is typically where attorneys get the list of witnesses against someone, the police reports, any medical reports that there are, any drug test results, all mm-hmm. of those things come out at that arraignment. And so before that point in time, that's when the confusion usually is for an individual who's charged with an offense, because they're there and they may, sometimes people were there and they know exactly what happened. Other times They have no earthly idea right. of why they're being charged, especially right. if they're not guilty. Exactly. And let's just, you know, a lot of times people want to jump to the conclusion that people who are incarcerated or people who get arrested, that means they did something. But that's not the case.
Especially when the mugshot is all over the news. All over the internet. All in the paper. Oh, so-and-so was arrested, right. you know, and you see people, you know, talking, you take them out, you know, that sapsucker this, and just so many negative things. But, you know, we are fortunate to have a legal system that you are innocent until proven guilty.
That's right.
And a lot of other countries, you are guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent. But we don't have that type system. But when we're holding people in jail, you know,
with like no evidence, haven't shown them any evidence of their guilt at all, or their family any evidence of what they have committed at all.
It seems like a huge human rights violation for me.
I would agree with that. I mean, we have a system set in place, but that system is only dependent upon people doing what they are supposed to do. And, you know, the only recourse that a defense counsel would have is one of two things. One, they can file a motion for bond, continuously ask the court to reduce their bond. Mm-hmm. But of course, in this type of a case, you know, this individual was charged with higher level offenses that, right. of course, would make anyone take pause and say, OK, well, let me make sure I'm protecting the victim and that kind of thing. So that comes into play when you have more serious offenses.
But in this case here, it appears that Judge Land was forced to cut his bond in half.
And a bond that he has now, $8,000. You know, that's extremely reasonable given what he's charged with and the mm-hmm. amount of time that he's been in custody. But that's something that it puts it in the judge's hands to try to figure out, you know, am I going to now release a person by force? Now, right. at this point, right. it's just come to me and right. I have to do something about right. this. When, of course, the judge doesn't have the file. Right. The judge doesn't know what the evidence is. That's only in the prosecutor's file.
Right.
And so it puts him in a position as well. You know, our system is set up that way. So the only other thing a person could do would be to file basically what is a constitutional motion for speedy trial. You know, you don't mm-hmm. even get the right to file a speedy trial demand until what? Yeah, until you're indicted. Right.
Exactly.
You have to get indicted. And right. then that trick. But people say that all the time.
The judge has presented the charges to you because the Constitution clearly states that an individual has to be aware of the charges that are brought against them.
Mm-hmm. And you have got to have, and people say that all the time when they just get locked up. Well, put in my motion for a speedy trial. You're not entitled to file that motion for speedy trial until you're indicted. Absolutely. So it really ties your hands as to what you can do for a client or what a person could do for themselves when they're incarcerated before indictment or before accusation, and they're just kind of in that downtime where supposedly the state is supposed to take that time to put together their case, compile all the reports, and then from that they would, you know, have a better idea of what the formal charges should be. But usually the police have done most of the work by the time of arrest. Mm-hmm. That's the case. And then mm-hmm. a lot of other times, if there are drug test results, that kind of thing, those things don't take 3-4 years. They just don't.
You know, and the judge has some very key quotes in this article. He said, "The Muskogee County Jail is not designed to be the first and last stop for people who are guilty of crimes. It is designed to be a temporary housing facility for those individuals who are awaiting their trial dates. If individuals accused of crimes are in fact guilty and deserve long-term incarceration, they should be indicted, tried, sentenced to prison upon conviction. If they are not in fact guilty, they should be released and returned to society as free citizens." This is a very strong condemnation, if you will, from the judge. I mean, he didn't parse his words. He was very clear. And I'm sure there are some people in rooms and done had meetings this week and everything else trying to resolve this. But the fact of the matter is, this rests solely on the office of the DA. And I know that you used to work there, and I'm not asking you to tell us anything internally. But where do you think the holdup may be?
Well, I mean, our district attorney, she's a good person, and I think she honestly really does try her best with it, you know, with everything. There are a lot of different people on her staff. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the order itself would tell you, I guess, who's representing the state and who's on each side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a problem.
It's a problem.
It's just, and I'm sure that this case is a unique case. I don't mm-hmm. know how many other people there are that have been in jail for 3 and 4 years. Mm-hmm. I do know, I am aware that in many times murder cases, those individuals stay, you know, in the jail for a good 2 or 3 years. There is that when it comes to murder cases. But I know this is not a murder case that's been referenced here. This is an individual with mental health issues, and those cases do tend to take longer usually after indictment, actually. Mm-hmm. But the issue here is indictment. You haven't been indicted. Therefore, it doesn't trigger your rights.
Judge McBride, he's the chief judge for our Superior Court Circuit here, and he contributed to the article as well. And he said, as of January the 14th, there were 452 inmates in Muskogee County Jail awaiting indictment that are beyond the 45-day indictment period, the guidelines set by the Georgia Uniform Rules of Superior Court. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. And it looks like that's about a third of the population down there. What do they have, about 1,100, 1,200 people down there right now? So that's a substantial amount of the population. But I will say 45 days, that would still be, that's really fast, actually, in the whole scheme of how many cases the prosecution handles. Just in my experience, 45 days is exceptionally fast. And I don't know.
So is this a matter where they need more resources down there? You need more people? You need more money? What we got to do is we got to fix this, because what we don't want are the lawsuits mounting where people's constitutional rights have been violated, and then we're just losing more money out of the county coffers because we're settling lawsuits.
That's true. Because ultimately that's what it's going to come to, because, you know, all these systems have mechanisms in place to correct them. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, there are repercussions for that.
Except at the federal government level, where the president can just run rogue. But again, this is the Teddy Reese Show. What I say is not a reflection of David broadcasting, but I mean, it checks and balance should be in place, right?
Right. And I'm sure that, you know, having had this come out, and I see in the article where Ms. Slater basically says that she wasn't aware of the order of the court, and hadn't had a chance to review it yet. So I'm sure, you know, she will probably get on top of this and probably try to see what they can do in their office. You know, I'm sure she doesn't know exactly what's going on with each and every case. So hopefully this is an aberration, and hopefully it's something that her office will get on top of and remedy, so that we don't have all these individuals down there who are innocent. They are legally innocent, just, you know, languishing in the jail, using up resources, because we have to pay for that. The city pays for that. And I pay for that.
Right. And, you know, it even got the attention of one of our new state senators who replaced Josh McCoon, Randy Robinson. He said in an article that Judge Land's ruling has snatched the Band-Aid off of a long existing problem within our criminal justice system. Having individuals charged with serious crimes sitting in a jail for long periods of time without indictment does nothing to provide relief to their victims, and only adds to the overall healing process. The problem also adds stress to the already overworked, understaffed, underpaid men and women who work in the county jail.
That's true.
And I have quite a few friends that work there in the Muskogee County Jail that I talk to, and I do wish that conditions were a little better for them as well. Mm-hmm. They're finding themselves, I mean, at one point we were excited because we had reduced the number of people in jail, mm-hmm. and closed the wing, and now we're back at capacity again. It's like we got to figure out where the bottlenecks are, but we got to take a quick break. I tell you, when you're having a good conversation, time just absolutely flies. I told you Jennifer was going to be amazing. If you haven't been impressed listening to this young lady in here today, we got to send you for a checkup. I mean, she is one of the baddest sisters I know. She is on point and just amazing with her knowledge of the law. I enjoy every conversation with her. So we're going to have another 15 minutes with Jennifer. We will be right back. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese.
I know you heard me. You have a new text. Go ahead, pick me up and check it out. You don't want to miss anything. It could be important. You should check now. Do you want to seem rude? You should respond now. Come on, just pick me up. It'll just take a second.
Don't text and drive. Hands-free cell phone use is now the law. This message brought to you by the Georgia Department of Transportation.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. I am here with my good friend, Attorney Jennifer Dunlap. We are just discussing some legal matters. We started out talking about the article that came out this week from WRBL that discussed the fact that we have over 400 people in the county jail that are more than 45 days without receiving an indictment, which kind of flies in the face of the Georgia Uniform Superior Court Code that's in place to guide us on that. And so if you heard that first half of the show, we certainly addressed that. But I want to talk with Jennifer about some other things. Jennifer, you have an organization that's called a Second Chance Criminal Record Relief. Tell us about that organization.
Right. So that is an organization that is geared towards criminal record issues that people might have. So we are in a place where we have Fort Benning here locally, and Fort Benning has been tightening up tremendously on who they let on that base, who they let on there to see relatives, who they let on there to work. And so we do a lot of work on people's criminal records where they are not allowed to come on the base. You might be surprised to know that basically if anyone has had a felony conviction in the last 10 years, you're not going on Fort Benning.
Wow.
If you've had three arrests of any kind in the last 5 years, you're not going on Fort Benning. If you have a drug with intent conviction, even if it was under the First Offenders Act, you're not going on Fort Benning. So they've really tightened up on that. And so I have a lot of contractors that come by that are being given denial letters. And so we basically have to get that sorted out so we can get those folks back to work. The other issues here in Muskogee County, our circuit does a lot of putting cases on the dead docket. And so I do a whole lot of opening cases up off the dead docket and entering final dispositions.
Now, explain what a dead docket is for our listeners.
So usually when a person goes to court and say they were charged with something like a simple battery, and then they're told, okay, your case is getting put on the dead docket, or we're going to dismiss it. Mm-hmm. The form of the dismissal a lot of times is a dead docket. There are many forms of dismissals, but the form called a dead docket actually leads to a semi-open case. It's something that can be revived and still prosecuted. So a lot of agencies recognize that as being an open and active case.
Mm-hmm.
And so they treat it as such, and they will not hire a person sometimes. They'll say, well, you have an open, simple battery. If you're trying to get in the nursing field, trying to be a CNA, trying to get a pistol permit, all of those things are going to be something that a dead docket is not going to work for. So what we have to do is get a final disposition. We petition the court to open the dead docket and enter a null pros, which is a final disposition that can't come back.
Right.
And usually when we do that, we also get an expungement. So again, and I know I talk a lot about expungements, but it's what I do really is a lot bigger than that. Expungements are for cases that are dismissed. So in many instances, expungements are not something that are actually hurting. Whatever the case is, it's not something that's actually hurting an individual that much because the case is already dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful thing that the legislature has given us recently is the ability to have the First Offenders Act used retroactively. So for individuals that have a felony conviction, meaning one felony conviction or one misdemeanor conviction on their record, we can go back and use the First Offenders Act to remove that and get an order of exoneration. And therefore, that individual, when we're finished, they're now checking, no, I do not have a felony conviction, or no, I do not have a misdemeanor conviction. And they're not having to discuss that with employers. And also, the employers are not seeing the records of that arrest because, as if they got first offender from the beginning.
You know, and that's important because what we're learning is that, you know, the whole check the box thing that we went through a few days, a few years ago, I mean, it felt good, but really it didn't do anything because if the employer does a background check, they're still going to find the information.
Right.
And so that didn't stop the process. So what you're saying is that if you're someone out there listening and you were convicted of one crime and you didn't utilize the First Offenders Act, it can be retroactively applied to your situation and that will wipe your background clean?
Absolutely. The arrest does not show up for an employer or the disposition. So when we're finished, if an individual just has that one arrest and conviction, when we're done, we get a new record for them and it shows no record found. And that's the way it's going to appear to employers. It'll say no record.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really powerful. So that's been very useful to a lot of folks in our community that are trying to pursue degrees in nursing. because that's a very sensitive industry. Uh-huh. And also, if anyone, of course, has like a theft case and then they're trying to work in retail, something so simple as a shoplifting from when someone's 17 is something that kind of can always come up and be an issue. And then a lot of people are on jobs for a long time and then something will happen and they'll go through an audit and everybody has to go get a background check. And sometimes, you know, the laws and the rules have changed and a lot of them are getting told, you know, you can't come back to work until you get this cleared up. So I deal with a lot of people who are in emergency situations. They're at a crisis. You know, a lot of people are on furlough now or whatever you want to call it with the mm-hmm. federal government. And it's the same thing when you just all of a sudden one day are told that you can't, you know, work here anymore until mm-hmm. you get something cleared up. It's an emergency. Mm-hmm. So we deal with a lot of that. And when those things happen, we try our best to work as quickly as we can to get the documents that we need signed by the judge, executed, and to that person's employer so they can go back to work.
You know, this is such a unique area of practice. I don't think I've ever heard anyone with the law practice that specifically works in this area, and it's such a huge need because I talk to so many people with the work that Wylesha Wilson is doing, and so many other folks that are trying to assist folks that are through the reentry process, trying to help them reincorporate themselves into society and not be punished or not have the lingering impacts mm-hmm. of incarceration. It seems like they need to be coming to see you, like, as soon as everything is clear.
Well, yeah, a lot of times, so what I deal with is individuals that really have had that one major run-in have had a lot of cases that are dismissed because, mm-hmm. believe it or not, in Georgia, if you've had any type of an arrest, that arrest is always going to show up for an employer unless you actively do something about that.
Now define dismissed. What when you say a case that's mm-hmm. dismissed, what does dismissed mean?
So a dismissed case could occur when you go to recorder's court, for instance, like your first appearance before a judge, and they immediately, you got arrested yesterday, today they're saying this case shouldn't even go forward. That is a warrant dismissal. That is the highest form of a dismissal. That means the warrant wasn't even enough for a prosecutor to create a charging instrument based on it. Mm-hmm. So if you have a warrant dismissal, the warrant was dismissed in your case, the law is that if you request an expungement, it shall be granted. Mm-hmm. They cannot not give you an expungement if the warrant was dismissed. Mm-hmm. But until you ask for it, it's going to be on your Georgia criminal arrest record, and employers will be able to see that you had that arrest and that case was dismissed. So obviously you want to ask for an expungement because you will automatically get one if you ask and pay the fee, you go right, through the steps. Right, usually you can apply for that at the arresting agency. So warrant dismissal, a no bill occurs when the case is presented to grand jury for indictment and that group of people decide that it should not go forward for prosecution. That is a no bill. That's another very high form of a dismissal. That is what will remain on your record until you go forward and ask for an expungement. There is a null pros, which means the case was indicted or was accused and then was later dismissed by a judge, by the prosecution. Mm-hmm. And then there's the dead docket, and that is for a case that was indicted, was accused, and then placed on a basically inactive docket, which is a form of a dismissal.
Wow. So if someone wanted to get in contact with the Second Chance Criminal Record Relief, what's a good number where they can reach you?
Well, they can call my office. Our number is 706-507-1381. And they will reach my assistant. She usually will get information from an individual, and then I'll follow up with a call back and sort of go more in depth into whatever their situation is.
Now, a Second Chance Criminal Record Relief is housed at Dunlap and Lakes.
Right.
Which is the firm of Jennifer Dunlap and Ray Lakes.
Right.
And both of you guys are former assistant district attorneys, right?
Well, he was always a criminal defense counsel.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm a former prosecutor.
You're a former prosecutor. Okay. He was always, okay. I just know both of you are very knowledgeable, you know, of this particular area. I don't do criminal law, but it's good to know people that do. And especially if you look at the conditions of our society and the fact that we're still plagued by the highest level of unemployment here in West Georgia, and you have people seeking jobs and you have those individuals that have made that one mistake in life and they're very remorseful of that mistake. They've done their time, they've paid all their fines, and they just want to go back to work and be a normal person. But things like this continue to plague them. You know, I'm sure you have been a lifesaver to so many different people. I can only imagine.
Well, I just thank God, you know, that it's something that I was able to get up to speed on. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, that I just a lot of times I feel so blessed to be able to help in our community and give back.
Well, awesome, awesome, awesome. We thank you, Jennifer, for coming in today and having this conversation with us. This has been a great conversation. And I certainly pray that you continue to stay involved with the community. I know you will. And I'm telling you guys, she is so friendly and so nice. If you see her, say hello to her. You
say
know,
hello.
Just walk up and say hi. You know, she won't cut your head off. She won't bite you or anything like that. Very knowledgeable, sharp sister, represent our community extremely well. Jennifer, thank you so much again for coming in. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. Don't forget to join us next Sunday. We're going to have another exciting show for you. So hope you enjoyed today. And if some of that went by you a little too fast, remember there are other opportunities to listen to the show again today on some of our sister stations. And you can also find it on the K92.7 website. It'll be uploaded in about a week, and you'll be able to hear it there again as well, because this show here was really impactful with a lot of information, and you certainly want to make sure you caught all that. So again, this has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and we'll talk with you soon. Take care.
Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and its radio programs are not to be considered necessarily the beliefs of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting.